The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer. Season 2, Episode 11 features David Keane, European CMO of Wipro, in conversation with Michael Nutley.
Hi, this is the Business of Marketing podcast, and we're coming to you from Advertising Week Europe in London. And I'm joined in the studio by David Keane, who's the CMO of Wipro. David, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
I thought we might start off with just a bit of a sort of a resume, what you do and how you got to be in such a dazzling position.
That's a big old question, Michael. I'll give you the short version of it. So I'm the European CMO at Wipro, who are one of the largest Indian service integrators. And my background, I spent a long time at Google, SAP, Salesforce, Oracle, and I've done a few startups along my way as well. Big old career. But I started out as an engineer. So if you need any coding done, I can help you with that.
Excellent. Tell me a little bit about what you do at Wipro and I guess how you think about marketing there.
Okay. So there's a couple of things to think about there. Is B2B marketing clearly is very different to B2C marketing or B2B2C marketing or any of those variations we might pull together. So we need to think about B2B in a different way in terms of how we get to a particular buyer. And then more and more how we get to a group of buyers. So really the big change that we see in the market is things are moving away from, okay, let's target a VP of IT or an HR director to which groups are getting together inside the organization to make a buying decision, and where does the money sit? How does the decision get made? And what's the influence structure there within that B2B context? So this idea of an influence map inside a large organization is really critical to the way we think about marketing and what we do.
Right. So, yeah, because I think this is super interesting, because I think, I think a lot of people have got to the idea that there's a buying committee.
Yeah.
And that they need to be targeted separately with specific messaging and content, but then going beyond that to people who have an influence but are not directly responsible, yeah. and being able to talk about that in a way that describes influence is really interesting. How do you approach that? Because it's a complex problem.
It's a complex problem, and I think the issue here is cultural inside the marketing organization. Marketeers have been trained to think about personas. So when you talk to a marketeer and you're like, okay, what is it you're doing on this particular activity? They're like, okay, I'm building this piece of content or this campaign or whatever it is they're doing, running an event for a particular persona. People think persona because it's easier to contextualize around I'm targeting one. When you get to anything that's large, and where the buying decision is complex, you're targeting many, and you've got to figure out how those many personas fit together. And we have the idea of a kind of ideal buyer or an ICP that people kind of fall back on. Who's the ideal buyer? How do we get to them? Even if we're looking at qualification in terms of our funnel and our pipeline management, we get into a situation of, does this person have the ability to make a decision? Do they have a budget? The whole BANT qualification piece falling apart. That's not the real world that we're living in anymore.
So no, absolutely. But how do you then approach it? If you're taking away that idea of a persona which underpins.
Yeah. So look, I think the key thing, the starting point for this is, you need to switch your organization into thinking about the customer in terms of the macro view of the customer. Many organizations are still stuck around going to market around their products or their services that they have. And if you think about who's at the center of the activities, the programs that you're running, many organizations I look at, I'll not name any, clearly. I won't shame any of my friends. But many of the organizations I look at put their product groups in the center, or the go-to-market initiative is around how their organization is structured rather than about how their customer base is structured. So how do we structure customers? Customers typically structure by industry and by size. So your segmentation needs to drive this buying group, buying committee kind of approach, group of personas. The other, if you like, you know, element to this multidimensional matrix that we're thinking about is geography and culture. So, you know, a buying group in the UK is very different to a buying group in Germany, is very different to a buying group in Mexico, in California, in New York, in Reykjavik, wherever you might be going to sell something. Those groups work in different ways. They have different cultural norms. So you have to be deliberate about this. And the way that I would start is by thinking about your program structure. And I'm putting that program level above campaign, because I think campaigns is kind of a dead term. Sorry to Campaign the magazine, but you know, programs to me are where you're sitting above that and you're thinking about a customer area of pain in a particular industry. And then you're thinking about what are the moments that matter inside that program that's going to run maybe across the whole year. And you're going to start to build up your upper funnel for nurture, start to convert those groups and get the groups to coalesce together, start to identify the accounts that are coming in, maybe using de-anonymization software, which there's many different types out there right now. We all have our favorites, you know, to try and identify those accounts, understanding, you know, what IP ranges are interacting with your website, you know, starting to use AI on things like, you know, the naming of the laptops that are connecting into your website so that you can then reverse map back to a particular account structure, targeting your named account list, figuring out how they fit together, starting to map with sales, the people that you're seeing there, you know, and bringing in things like Sales Navigator in LinkedIn, and starting to put together these structures that then allow you to target a particular set of buyers with different messages. And I think the key to this is to start to figure out not the personas, but the roles that these people play. So some people will be sponsors, some people will be detractors, some people will be coaches. And as you're thinking about that more sales narrative from a holistic perspective, you can start to think about the activation and the tactics you want to put in place. You know, it could be as simple as display advertising or, you know, individual pieces of content that actually move somebody from one state to another or nurture somebody down the buyer journey. And this buyer journey, buyer experience piece is really, really key. And it moves beyond just how good is my website, you know, to a, you know, how does a person typically navigate their journey with us? And is it a persona or is it a, you know, almost like a net promoter in a B2B world?
Oh, that's really interesting. So what, yeah, tell me more. I'm fascinated.
Yeah, I think we could talk for a long time on this topic, but you know, if you go back to kind of how you structure your organization, how you structure marketing, people will typically try and get back to things that are easy to understand, such as a content calendar or an event calendar or, you know, a particular set of activities that generate a whole range of marketing qualified leads where marketing then says, we've done really well, here's some marketing qualified leads, and sales then says, yeah, we didn't close any of those, so that wasn't particularly useful. I think it moves us to a world where you have to partner with sales and you have to be kind of riding together on that journey. So sales isn't very interested in the early stage of the journey. They're interested in the later stage when something's starting to look real and we can move it forward. And we need to think about the channel structure that you're going to get access to the different opportunities that are going to be in that pipe in a B2B perspective, and how you're then going to frame those opportunities and identify them and figure out where do we put the money, where do we put the time, and how do we move away from just let's create a piece of content because somebody wants to say something interesting about AI or whatever it might be, whatever the topic du jour happens to be, into a much more complicated matrix of activations that are going to help those people move forward. And I think there's a whole set of new tooling in the marketing world, particularly the B2B space, that's going to start to emerge where we use AI that's able to deal with these kind of multifaceted interactions in a way that people right now struggle to do. So I think we're on a bit of a we're on a cusp here of, you know, how do we tackle the variety of people influencing these deals, the variety of roles, personas, characters, cultures, and how do we plug them together into a structure where we can manage that buyer journey moving forward?
And this is against a backdrop of people opting out of speaking to potential suppliers. People, you know, really saying, actually, what we kind of all knew all along was that nobody wants to talk to a salesperson.
Nobody wants to talk to a salesperson until they're at the point where they have to. And in a big deal, of course, there's a point when there's an engagement with the organization and meetings start to happen. I think one of the key things to recognize in this journey is, you know, if you look at the typical process large organizations go through from a B2B perspective, they'll often put together an RFP, or the last letter can be many different types of letter, an RFX, shall we call it, you know, a request for something. Now, the interesting thing about the whole RFP, RFX construct there is, if an organization has decided they've got a problem and decided how they want to fix it, they've already formulated and got together as a buying group, and they've written this thing up, and they've put together the criteria for win-loss, and it's been influenced by the people who have particular commercial connections to particular vendors, then unless you're the vendor that they're promoting at this point, you've probably lost that engagement.
Yeah.
So the key to this is to actually engage before the RFX comes in and to have those relationships with your target accounts and to understand, okay, where do we win? Where do we lose? Which things have we got that are repeatable? How do we take those things in to a particular group and influence them to write that RFP, RFX in a particular way? Or better still, just kind of come around the whole thing and just go straight to you as a vendor. That doesn't happen very often. But it's that framing the requirement and understanding the customer pain. And, you know, if you look at techniques like challenger selling, for example, so how marketing aligns its activities to, say, a challenger methodology and from a sales perspective is really, really interesting. You know, you're looking to have a point of view around industry constructs that align back to real pain points, complex pain points that individuals in the organization have. And that moves you away from just saying, let's sell to the CEO. The CEO is really busy, and the CEO is delegating into the organization, but may take a final call on this thing. Or the CFO, or the CIO, CTO, whatever it is, they're putting teams on these activities. And also the sales cycles are long, and you have to be ready for this. So which industries can we tackle? Which markets do we have a footprint? You know, which markets are more beachhead markets where we're going to try and actually just get our first smaller win? How do we put sales tactics in place with a marketing backbone behind them where we, you know, maybe there's an account we want to get into where we look at some kind of land and expand strategy or a wedge strategy where we put something in there that we can then grow and build based on the relationships we have in place? So I think you're probably getting this sense of a very complex dynamic. And each business is going to be different in the way that they sell. And it's going to be based around their product or service and how that goes to market and how you put that in place. But my feedback, I think, to other marketeers would be to think in a more open way about this bigger picture and to measure yourself around opportunities that are created and then your win ratio. And then probably like the revenue that comes out of there. If it's a service, you need to think about your book-to-bill ratios and how marketing can kind of impact those. You know, if it's a smaller thing or if it's a SaaS solution, then you're looking at lifetime value and how that then plays through and churn and those sort of statistics. And moving away from these interim things like, hey, we've got a lead. Wow, good job, guys. Well done. It's like, okay, you've got a lead. What? Will it ever close?
So, because what I've, you know, it's somewhat simplistically, I've sort of characterized things as being the job of marketing now is to, as you say, to engage with potential customers.
Yep.
as far up the funnel as possible, or rather to persuade them to engage with you as far up the funnel as possible.
That's part of it, not the whole piece though. So marketing needs to engage with the customer throughout the funnel, not at the just at the top of the funnel. I think marketing's sometimes lazy. Please don't send me hate mail on this, but marketing can be lazy about saying, yeah, we're just, you know, we're looking at clicks or views or everything. Yeah, so what? I can get lots of views on anything. It's not a problem. But did it do anything? You know, does it turn into something real? And we need to be thinking about the balance of demand and brand and how that maps out across that whole funnel, and how you're putting in place this, you know, this go-to-market strategy with sales, where you're saying, look, we're building the brand so we scale, but we're feeding you and creating the opportunities in the lower pipeline, and then supporting them through sales enablement as well to take you through then to a closure point. And we're going to measure these whole things, all of these, in a holistic way.
Because the other side of this, and I was talking about this earlier with somebody else, is you know, you're the kind of the output mm-hmm. of the marketing department has it at the same time becomes incredibly complex as you, or not complex, but
multifaceted.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the word I was looking for. You've got X many customers, you've got or potential customers, you've got X many channels,
yeah,
you know, and you start to do the sums, and it turns into a big number very, very quickly.
It does.
How do you maintain this? I mean, yeah, you can have brand guidelines or things. How do you maintain that sort of deeper sense of culture of brand meaning?
Yeah,
when you're devolving, you know, so much of the content creation out,
yeah,
out from necessity.
Yes, of course. So your brand book, you know, whatever your brand standards are, that needs to be built around your values. And, you know, putting your values at the center of this will allow you to be genuine and to live your brand. Your brand isn't the colors and the font, you know, that's on there. That's a representation of your values and what you stand for and how you're really, you know, what your mission is in the world. So really understanding what you're there to try to do, understanding your values, and then turning that into your brand and communicating that brand effectively, and communicating it through assets, tonality, graphic design, and behaviors, more importantly, is really, really key. You can have a fabulous brand, and then, you know, team members behave badly in the world, and that's not going to work. They need to kind of mesh together. Yeah. So you need to be able to figure out how to plug together your brand design, the look and feel, what you stand for, with everything, all the way down from, you know, there's a big trend at the moment to do a lot of Formula One advertising is a good example. You know, we had a whole discussion around should we get involved in Formula One. We said no, because actually that kind of fossil fuels promotion piece we feel is the wrong thing from our values. You know, sustainability doesn't necessarily fit into that whole piece. You know, we've got a big problem on the planet in terms of climate change. So what else should we do? And we went out and sponsored a sailing race, the Jules Verne, which is, there's a group of women who are trying to do it. And there's never been a female crew break the Jules Verne record or even take part in it. And this is the first one. So we thought, okay, this is about diversity. This is about breaking a record and a glass ceiling. And our tagline is ambitions realized. So this fitted in really well for us. So figuring out, you know, what does your tagline say? What does it mean? Does it fit to your behaviors? Do you forget about it when you're actually trying to activate things because you think, okay, there might be somebody at the Formula One who's going, you know, who's going to actually give us a deal, and we really like motor racing anyway in the back, you know. It's like, okay, are you living your brand? Are you kind of, you know, doing everything that you should be doing?
Who's doing this well? Who do you look at and go, yeah, there, when you're talking to a client, you know, you say, look at so-and-so.
I'm not going to name names here because I think I'm going to get myself into trouble. But I think and people have their own favorites and their own points of view on this. But I think when I personally engage with brands, I really want to feel like the brand that I'm engaging with shares some of my values. And, you know, there are some very well-documented cases, you know, over the past couple of years around individuals maybe buying companies, social media companies that we could possibly name, you know, and doing things there which maybe damage that kind of brand recognition and that brand connection. And some people may think that they're still great places. I kind of challenge people on that and get them to think about, you know, do you want to put your advocacy and your engagement and you know, and your budgets into those channels or into those businesses? You know, the world is a complex place. We know that. It's a tough place. And if we all aligned our values and our brands a little more, then I think we would make things better.
Yeah, yeah. So just looking forward, you know, what are you excited about when you look at the world of B2B marketing specifically, I'm afraid?
I'm excited about the death of third-party data. I'm really excited about that. I know that's a bit of a geeky thing. I think third-party data is the worst thing in the world. All of my B2B friends out there will get regular emails from data vendors saying, we have a full list of buyers in this particular space that we can sell you for this amount of money. You know, please just buy this data from us. It's all fully legit. It's not legitimate. Like, we need to kill third-party data. We need to move to a permission-based world with first-party data where people identify themselves and say, yep, we'd like you to communicate to us because the quality of what you're doing is really, really good. So I'm really excited about the death of third-party data. I wish it would hurry up. Like, Google keep pushing this back. My friends at Google, can we just kind of get this done? Because, like, we're all in limbo right now. So let's move past this limbo period of first-party, third-party. Oh, my God. Let's get rid of cookies. Like, how many clicks have we all done in a combined way to get rid of that, like, accept button for the, you know, like, everybody does, it's meaningless. Let's get rid of that. Let's get rid of cookies. Let's get rid of broader third-party data. Let's get rid of data vendors as well. You know, like, selling data to people is just, like, a bad thing to do. Nobody wants their data sold. So we need to be really respectful around data. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about kind of the death of some of the channels and the death of social media that we're going through at the moment. And we're seeing this, like, the different channels that we've got failing and dying and, you know, certain kind of groups being the only groups on particular social media channels. I think that's really, really interesting. And it's, so what comes after social media? What's the next channel structure? And Cory Doctorow has got a very, very good piece. I don't know if I can say it on the podcast, but it's about, you can bleep this out if you need to. It's about enshittification of channels and products. And I love that. I'm so excited about the enshittification of channels. And you see it everywhere. You see these channels becoming amazing and then dying. And it's like, wow, this is great. Because the death of those channels and the death of those services means that new things can come in, new organizations. Where's the next Google? So if Google fails and crashes and burns, then maybe that means that, you know, 1,000 new Googles can form. So that's really, really super exciting. And then, of course, you have to say AI, but I've got a slightly contrarian view on, like, why I'm excited about AI. I'm excited about AI because I think it kills dumb content and poor content. And there is so much content on the internet which is terrible. If AI can write poor content for us, then we're going to have to do a better job at what we do. So this is about people and tools building fabulous content that really engages. AI is not going to do that. If AI automates all the basic things that are in there, that's great. Can we as people then focus on doing less with more, not more with less? and really saying, look, I've got all these amazing tools. I've got these amazing AI platforms. I've got all of this data, you know, in my CRM environment and my MarTech stack. Can I really do something fabulous with that and focus my time on doing the right things rather than just churning out endless points of view that no one's going to read?
Thank you, David. That's been absolutely fascinating.
No worries. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks a lot.
The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer.